This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is the General Counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C., Mary Thomas Hart. Mary Thomas will talk about Waters of the U.S. or WOTUS in just a moment. First off, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack last week telling Senate Ag Committee why disaster bills should be general and flexible.
When you established the WIP program and so forth, nobody anticipated that you'd have a winter storm of the magnitude that we had in the Dakotas. And so we had to kind of look at the language of that and try to figure out, are winter storms included in the language or not? Because we wanted to get help to folks. I mean, so it's just really difficult to be specific as you would like it to be, in order to cover anything and everything that can happen.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Mary Thomas Hart. Mary Thomas is Chief Counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Mary Thomas, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. Seems like one of the topics you and I talk about every time we talk, which is a few times each year, is the acronym WOTUS. W-O-T-U-S stands for Waters of the U.S., and why would we be talking about that again today?
It's been a pretty busy couple weeks in WOTUS world, Tony. So yesterday, the Biden administration's WOTUS definition went into effect March 20th, 2023, but the weekend before was actually really busy in the federal courts. So when the Biden administration announced that it was set to finalize this rule, NCBA and a coalition of other national trade associations filed a lawsuit in the Southern District of Texas asking for a nationwide injunction of the rule. Unfortunately, the district court declined our request for a nationwide injunction, but did grant an injunction in two states, Texas and Idaho. So if you live in Texas or Idaho, you're not subject to the Biden administration's WOTUS rule. However, for producers and landowners in the other 48 states, it is yet another era of WOTUS regulation.
Now, again, to kind of set the stage, I know we do this each time, but it's easy to get lost with how we got to where we are today. Waters of the U.S. really coming from Congress, if I understand correctly, but was left open for definition by EPA. Is that a good way to frame it?
I think that's absolutely right. So Waters of the U.S. is actually a term of art that's in the Clean Water Act, which was passed by Congress in 1972. It's pretty vague. That doesn't give a lot of clarification. And EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers have been working since that law was passed back in 1972 to find a definition that works for regulators and landowners and other interested stakeholders, right? So the question has been to the Supreme Court four times now. We've been through 13 different regulatory iterations. I actually believe that the Biden administration's rule is the 14th regulatory definition of WOTUS in the last 50 years. So a lot of regulatory uncertainty for landowners and other regulated stakeholders. And I think, you know, every time we get a Supreme Court decision or every time we get a new rule and have to litigate it, as grueling as the process is, I think we get closer and closer to some finality on this issue. And it's certainly an issue we'd like to close the books on.
And is it just one of those situations where we have different views of what it means to protect the waters of the U.S., because really at the heart of this, it's not whether our waters are getting dirtier or whether they're not clean enough. It's just different perspectives. Is that a fair assessment as well?
I think that is a fair assessment. And it's also a question of not if waters are effectively managed or not. It's who has the authority to determine what is effective management, right? So really the definition of WOTUS is just a line drawing exercise. It tells us which features are subject to federal permitting requirements and which features are left to state and local entities and landowners, right? We tell the EPA all the time, you know, farmers and ranchers, cattle producers especially, have a very selfish interest in maintaining the water quality on their land. Not only does it feed their livestock, but their families and their communities, right? We're not out there trying to pollute our water supply. And I think that's something that we've gotten across in the past. But certainly an uphill battle with this administration and this rule, and a rule that creates a lot of new uncertainty for landowners across the country.
So when we talk about this uncertainty, what's happening from the producer's perspective? So somebody who was trying to manage under the Obama era rule, and then suddenly it completely changes under the Trump administration, and then another complete change under the Biden administration. What does this do to a landowner?
Great question. You know, I think the Biden administration tried to find some middle ground between the Obama rule and the Trump rule. The Obama rule gave us regulatory clarity by regulating everything, right? There was no question if something was in or out because it was all subject to federal regulatory requirements. The Trump administration pulled that back and gave us some really helpful bright line rules for what categories of waters were jurisdictional and which were going to be left to states and local communities to manage. Again, a really helpful rule. And I think, you know, in our opinion, provided the necessary and appropriate scope of Clean Water Act authority. The Biden administration, in attempting to kind of find some middle ground between those two rules, created a lot of uncertainty by not telling us if ephemeral features are going to be regulated, by not telling us if isolated features are going to be regulated, instead saying that those features might be regulated, which means that you have to spend a lot of time and money on outside consultants, on the jurisdictional determination process, before you begin a project.
Okay. What we have not really done a deep dive, at least on here, is the Supreme Court hearing, which happened, I believe, last year. So how does that factor into all of this?
It's a huge part of the equation, and we're expecting a decision from the Supreme Court sometime in the coming weeks. And that decision will be in the case Sackett versus EPA, which, like I said earlier, is the fourth time that the court has considered the definition of WOTUS. But for six of the nine justices, it's the first time that they've considered the WOTUS issue. And I think that there was some consensus really across the political spectrum of the bench that significant nexus is not a viable test that can be reliably used by either landowners or regulators. So I won't be surprised at all if the decision in the Sackett case pulls back the significant nexus test in some way. And if that happens, I would say that there's a pretty high likelihood that the Biden administration's rule doesn't survive because it relies so heavily on the significant nexus test.
So if that happens, then where do we go?
If that happens, the rule goes back to the drawing board, right? So EPA takes the rule back and has to rewrite it within these new confines or new restrictions put in place by the Sackett opinion. Obviously, that's a lot of guesswork, so I don't want to look too far into the crystal ball. But, you know, I think if we get a helpful opinion from the Supreme Court, it's at least going to, you know, require EPA to think a little harder, to work a little harder on a rule that more appropriately scoped the authority of the federal government in the Clean Water Act, which I think in the long term is going to be really helpful for landowners, including farmers and ranchers.
And again, another aspect of this is if that rule stays in place, though there is an injunction right now in the two states that you mentioned, if that rule does stay in place, how is that going to be enforced? Will that require more boots on the ground from EPA, if you will, to go out and try to enforce this?
we're continuing to litigate the case, right? So, you know, I think there's still the chance that we could get the rule turned over. But in the meantime, my advice, not formal legal advice, but just kind of in interpreting this rule, my advice to landowners is to get a second set of eyes on any water features that you're planning projects for, in the next few months at least. So, you know, call your NRCS office, call your county soil and water management district, and get some technical assistance, get somebody to look at it and kind of talk through the new definition, because this new rule is so dependent on case by case determinations. Every feature could be treated differently. And so that's, I think, one of our biggest issues with this rule is the amount of time and money that will be required to comply, which is certainly not our preferred scenario. But I think at the present time, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Obviously, good for any producer or landowner who is planning on doing something here in the next few months or in the near term. But for those who aren't planning on doing something but are concerned, what do they need to do?
You can call your Senate and your senator and tell them to support the Congressional Review Act's resolution of disapproval of the Biden-WOTUS rule. So, you know, we're really lucky that Congress does have a mechanism that they can use to potentially have this rule pulled back. It's called the Congressional Review Act. It's been used a couple times recently. And so this resolution to disapprove of the Biden-WOTUS rule passed through the House a couple weeks ago. It's now set to get a vote on the floor of the Senate this week. If it passes through the Senate, it will go to President Biden's desk. And while we, you know, assume that he will veto that piece of legislation, I think it's important to send a very clear message, not only to the White House, but to the Supreme Court, that Congress does not agree with the EPA's implementation of the Clean Water Act in this way. So, you know, regardless of where you are in the country, regardless of how, you know, directly impacted you're going to be by WOTUS in the, you know, recent in the near future, call your senator and ask them to vote yes on the CRA WOTUS resolution.
Mary Thomas Hart is chief counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, headquarters in Washington, D.C., on today's Agribusiness Report.
Ranchers, I will see you at the 2023 Hemp Hill County Beef Cattle Conference, April 25th and 26th in Canadian, Texas, sponsored by Capital Farm Credit. Tucker Brown here of the R.A. Brown Ranch, and as a young rancher, I'm excited to hear the nationally known speakers, see the 85 trade show vendors, and eat some amazing beef. Register today online at Hemp Hill County Beef Conference website or call 806-323-9114. That's 806-323-9114.
Mark your calendar for the Plains Cotton Growers 66th Annual Meeting in the Overton Hotel and Conference Center in Lubbock, March 28th. PCG, High Plains Journal, and StoneX Group have partnered for an all-day event ranging from an industry outlook provided by U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan to breakout sessions on the upcoming Farm Bill, sustainability, weed control, and interest rate hedging. With something for every producer, including CEU credits, register today for this free event at plainscotton.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, General Counsel, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Mary Thomas Hart.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dry land cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dry land cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer healthcare benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative healthcare solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. You can keep up with NCBA online, beef.org.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Ranchers, I will see you at the 2023 Hemp Hill County Beef Cattle Conference, April 25th and 26th in Canadian, Texas, sponsored by Capital Farm Credit. Tucker Brown here of the R.A. Brown Ranch, and as a young rancher, I'm excited to hear the nationally known speakers, see the 85 trade show vendors, and eat some amazing beef. Register today online at Hemp Hill County Beef Conference website or call 806-323-9114. That's 806-323-9114.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The recent train derailment and resulting problems with hazardous materials in East Palestine, Ohio, possibly has the makings of an agricultural disaster situation for farmers in or near that area as far as assuring their milk, meat, and crops are still safe for consumption. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told the Senate Ag Committee Thursday that this situation goes to prove that when it comes to designing agricultural disaster legislation,
you will never, ever be able to figure out every possible disaster, to be able to fashion a disaster program that fits circumstances all the time.
He says the only way really is to craft a disaster bill that's flexible enough to cover any situation.
So to the extent that you can provide flexibility and allow us to have the capacity to respond to a disaster regardless of its design or cause or structure, that would be helpful.
He said it could save a lot of time in getting help to those who need it. Gary Crawford, Washington.